Again, good morning or afternoon, everyone, depending on where you are, and welcome to emforum.org. We are very glad you could join us today. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host. We will be providing some instructions as we go along for any first-timers among us, so you can relax and participate with us. Now, if you need assistance, you may use the hand-raising button on your participants panel, and our associate, Lori Weber, will try to help you via the chat panel, or you can just send her a private message. This past year, we have seen a number of demonstrations around the country, and with the political conventions coming up, we may be seeing even more. We thought it would be a good time to look at this topic and learn about the unique planning considerations for these type of events, basically at the awareness level. First, for the benefit of any newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions and comments. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, along with a copy of today's slides. And then the text transcript will be posted early next week. If you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready, as well as notices of future programs. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce August Vernon. This is his time with us, and you may also want to check out the program he did for us about a year and a half ago, because unfortunately that topic is also timely. August has been employed in emergency management for 11 years and also served as a professional with fire service and as a fire service instructor. For 4 years, he served in the U.S. Army as a chem, bio, radiological, and nuclear operations specialist. He has also written many nationally published articles and authored the First Responder Critical Incident Field Guide. Please see today's background page for further biographical information and, as I mentioned, related links. Welcome back, August. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Amy, and good afternoon, or again, morning to everyone who's on today. I know we've got participants from all over the country. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to be here. We've got a lot of information to cover, so I will go ahead and get started on the program. I think really where this comes from, I know for those in the emergency management realm, every time you've ever done an emergency management assessment looking at hazards, risks, vulnerabilities in a community, and I've been involved in these and seen others, we always tend to list civil unrest, riots, or protests under those human-caused incidents, but there's never any information or training available for emergency management on what the role of emergency management and planning for those type of events is. So I kind of thought it was important to do this training for emergency management. Again, this is not how to deal with rioters or, you know, gather intelligence or anything on this. This is more looking at how the community can prepare for these events, what's happened in the past, what we're going to look forward to. So I will move forward here. Let's see if I can get it to move. There we go. And again, to follow up with what Amy said last year on January 27th, 2011, we did a short awareness level webinar on mass shootings, mass shooting planning and response awareness, and that is available at the EM Forum archive. So I would strongly encourage you to go take a look at that. That course, like this one, the mass shooting course is typically 4 hours long. So we try to do these webinars 30 to 40 minutes in length for awareness. But if you go back to the archive, we have both the audio and a PowerPoint available for you. And obviously with what happened in Colorado, that's important right now. Okay, moving along. Okay, when it comes to these type of events, we definitely need to recognize that to have a safe and successful response to these situations, whether they're large or small, is very important. And to prepare for these incidents, like any other critical incident, it is going to take some planning, some preparation, maybe some training on a community. Statistically, the likelihood of civil unrest incidents is low, but public safety agencies and officials, we really need to look at this and plan for those. And again, we always seem to identify that as a hazard in the emergency management realm, but we never really focus on that. Also, recently across the United States, there have been a lot of incidents going on. And so I think it's important that we train for those, especially with us getting into the election cycle. And there's been events overseas, and so these all show us that locally, regionally, states need to look at, you know, how can we plan and prepare for this. The normal class that I do on this is typically 3 to 4 hours again. So this is a little awareness level course, and I'll kind of briefly cover a few topics involved with this subject. So our goal, my methodology instructor 20 years ago told me we always need to have a goal in a class. So our goal is really just provide our listeners with maybe some basic tools and information needed to develop a plan, assess your plan, or if you're going through some type of planning process, you know, how can we assess that? What do we need to use to prepare for that? And so with a diverse group that you have, like on this webinar, I'm not trying to tell you how you need to train and plan for these, because every jurisdiction and community is different, but rather what's going on and what you need to look at is the issue or the threat. I will start out by saying, you know, I think it's very important in the United States that we have the right to protest, and that's very important. So the definition I'm going to try to kind of focus on is the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and I'm not going to read that definition to you, but basically it's that unlawful assembly that has potential for violence. And I go back there, highlighted in red, you know, the U.S. First Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, guarantees us the right to peaceful assembly and our right to petition the government, and I think that's very important. My focus is not on just protests and how to, you know, get permits for those and how to plan for those. I am focused on those rare occasions when that line is crossed and public safety becomes a concern to the community. So I just wanted to start out saying that. So, and kind of timely here, not even really paying attention to this, just in Anaheim, California, they've had a couple nights of issues now of some civil unrest going on, some protests and violence. They actually stormed the police station. Some disturbances going on related to an officer-involved shooting fatality that occurred, I believe, this weekend. And also, I just saw right before I came on, the same thing is going on in Dallas, Texas right now. They've had an officer-involved shooting fatality that's led to some confrontations and some issues, some civil unrest issues. So this is what we're talking about right here. So I think these are timely. And these incidents can really happen anywhere, any jurisdiction, big or small. All right, the first process with any threat, whether we were talking about terrorism or a plane crash or a flood or a tornado or a mass shooting or civil unrest, is you always want to look at, you know, what's happened before, what's the threat, what could occur, and one of the ways you do that is where have these events occurred before. So a civil unrest event can occur for a variety of reasons. And again, they don't just occur in large urban areas. How can these happen? How have they happened before? Sometimes you will have peaceful demonstrations and protests that can turn very confrontational. You have had issues recently with major sporting events or celebrations or losses. It kind of surprised me, some areas, whether they win or lose, there's going to be civil disturbance, but that happens with sporting events. Some concerts. Some of these block parties that have turned into confrontations, and obviously planned political conventions where we are prepping here in North Carolina for the Democratic National Convention. They're getting the RNC, and so those obviously can be disrupted. Also, areas we'll call hot spots, such as research facilities or Planned Parenthood locations. Are just like the incident in California and Dallas, Texas, officer-involved shootings in certain communities can lead to this happening. And kind of two more recent threats or terms we can look at is the flash mobs. You know, 90% of flash mobs are harmless and fun, but some are flash mobbing for purposes to cause serious issues, and Occupy events. That term's kind of new this year. Again, majority of Occupy events are safe and no problems, but some have led to some serious problems and confrontations there. So there is a wide variety of incidents that can cause, you know, a civil arrest to occur in a community. So continuing on that thread, you know, it near college campuses, again, it seems with some of these sporting events, whether they win or lose, that there can be civil unrest. Most March Madness events turn out fine, but every year there seems to be some issues with that, with students becoming very disorderly and impacting the community. So I think communities that number one have major sporting events, especially those that are people are emotionally tied into, you know, I think you need to look at planning for, you're already planning for a sporting event. This just needs to be a component of that plan. And, of course, we are entering the political season, a hotly contested political season. So the RNCs, the DNCs, the presidential debates, the G8 summits, the G20 summits, and all the other summits that take place have historically had some type of confrontation occur. And there's a couple ways. I've seen these broken down. You know, you can call this organized, which is your planned events, sporadic, which is your college campuses, sporting events, concerts, flash mobs, Mardi Gras, spring break incidents, your racially driven officer-involved shootings in certain communities. If you have a prison or jail in your community, they have plans in place for a disturbance. You need to know what those are, because in some of these facilities, if they have a large enough incident, that's going to involve local response agencies to be involved in that. All right, again, as part of that process, especially if we're looking at those human-caused incidents like terrorism or civil unrest or mass shootings, we have to look at who's the threat, who's actually doing this, who can be the threat. This is part of that information intelligence sharing. So when I look at civil unrest events, and these names can kind of shift around a little bit depending on what's going on at the time. Recently, we found a lot of the anarchists and Black Bloc, and I'll talk a little more about what a Black Bloc is. There has been some anarchist-related violence going on here in the past few months in several cities. Extremist groups of varying types and flags and colors, all different types there you can have issues with. In a lot of communities, and I think we're seeing this in Anaheim and in Dallas even now with what's going on there, is your local gangs are going to take advantage of this. They're going to be involved in this, and they may even make it much worse. So they're going to take advantage of that. Also, just inflamed and emotional crowds can lead to these issues. Events that are controversial can lead to issues. And I can say in a lot of these concerts and sporting events and block parties, a lot of this is called alcohol-fueled. That can lead to a lot of issues. And I can even relate back to my days in the fire department, you know, running medical calls into some of these events. And if there's alcohol in crowds, that's going to lead to problems. So when you're looking at the threat, I think you have to look at if you're planning for an event, you know, who's the crowd? Is a way to simplify that. What type of event is it, and who's the crowd? Obviously, 99% of events and concerts, and you know, on the 4th of July here, our family goes every year to 4th of July event with thousands of participants, and there's never a problem. You just have to look at who's the threat, who's the crowd, what's the event. So just a couple examples here. I've got a lot of these. Some of these are a few years older. Knoxville, Tennessee, 500 University of Tennessee students led a rowdy party celebrating football team celebration, get out of hand, people throwing debris, setting fires, people being arrested. New Hampshire at a hockey loss during a championship game, large number of people being arrested, people throwing beer cans and rocks at police officers and firefighters, and fires being set. And I'm just trying to show you several different types of events in different communities that can occur. Columbus, Ohio, they had, after Ohio State defeated Michigan State, you had fires and fighting and looting going on there. Cincinnati, Ohio, a few years ago, what was called the Over the Rhine neighborhood. This was due to a police-related shooting fatality again. This led to 3 days of violence, over 100 arrests, over 100 injuries. You had looting, vandalism, arson fires. And this was an event that was heavily led by gangs, as I said earlier. Your local gangs are going to take advantage of this. I talked about this one earlier. This one, why I wanted to bring this up, you know, sometimes the thought is that perspective is, well, fire an EMS, law enforcement would be assaulted, but fire an EMS won't be. That doesn't apply anymore. You had firefighters and medical personnel getting injured, people throwing rocks and bottles at them. This was in Benton Harbor, Michigan. This was due to a police shooting fatality. They had looting, vandalism, and arson. And the key thing here, they had 3 days of riots. Benton Harbor was a small town of only 12,000 people. So it does not necessarily have to be a larger community where these incidents can happen. And here they destroyed homes. They destroyed police trucks and fire cars. They had a lot of issues there in Benton Harbor. A different type of event, we're talking about our planned events. This was the Miami Free Trade protests. And a couple of thought processes here. When these big events come up, just like here in North Carolina, we are preparing for the DNC. Some of the groups that are going to be there protesting, they're planning up to months before. And what happens, and this happened, again, most protests are peaceful and people have that right. What happens, especially with anarchists, is they are going to show up in the crowds and they're going to incite violence in small numbers. So when they show up at an event, there needs to be concern there. And they'll use these improvised weapons, you know, slingshots that shoot ball bearings and marbles and things like that. And again, this happens again and again and again where these individuals are at. And I'm using this free trade event just to show you some things that happen that you have to plan and prepare for. They would fill bottles with urine and feces and launch those at law enforcement. And Miami was tied up for several days with thousands of protesters. Now, the key thing here is majority of those protests were peaceful. You had puppet shows and street theater and music and bands. And so there was very limited violence, but that's what some of these type groups want. They want to come in and disturb everybody and cause problems in larger crowds. So we could spend an hour or two talking about just anarchists and black bloc, but I just want to throw this term out because you're starting to see it again. We've already heard it several times this year with some of the events in the United States that have been going on. A black bloc is more of a tactic that these organizations will use. It can be a collection of anarchists or affinity groups that come together for a specific protest. And they're going to be held in reserve, just like law enforcement's held in reserve. And they're going to show up to disrupt a mass arrest to cause confrontation. So there's nothing positive about a black bloc. You just have to be prepared for that when you hear this term. And why they kind of wear masks and dress in all black is because you know, they are representing the mass of humanity. They're not an individual. They are a black bloc of one. So just kind of be familiar with that term if and when you hear that. And there's not really a lot of positive that comes out of that term if you hear that showing up in your community. This is self-explanatory, a lot of lessons learned in these events. The one on the left was a big hockey championship in Canada. The one on the right was one of the officer-involved shootings. When people start lighting fires, you have to get these fires out as quick as possible because they're just a magnet for people. And once one fire set, it's going to lead to more and more and more fires. So that's just a planning process you need to think about. This is just a picture. Years ago, we did some training here. And I'll talk a little bit about this, but the protesters will, even in a peaceful manner, are going to chain themselves together, put their arms in cement blocks, put their arms in PVC pipes, and create sleeping dragons and all kinds of things. And so when they do this, you have to, it takes a lot of different resources to safely remove these individuals out of these devices. We just can't take a fire axe and chop that PVC pipe in half. you know, we need to do that in a safe manner. It takes several agencies to do that. And this was just some of the training that we had done here. So some lessons learned from past events. And, again, I'm talking about this with emergency management, not the expectation. Your emergency management is going to be out there doing this, but you will be involved in threat assessments for these events, planning for these events, coming up with incident action plans for these events, pulling in resources for these events. So we want to kind of think, you know, what are some things that have happened in the past? If you have construction sites near where these events are going to take place, you've got to secure those because that allows these people access to rocks, bricks, barrels, dumpsters. There have been incidents where people will take barrels and fill them with water and roll them down the hill towards responders. And I can't stress it enough, alcohol is a significant contributor to violence. So I say that to emergency management. A lot of times on your state of emergency paperwork or your declarations you have on that banning the sale of alcohol, this may be the one time that you need to do that in your community. If it's a, you know, if this event's going to be over in 2 hours, you don't need to address that. But if you know there's going to be problems, you need, this is one of the things you can look at even in a, doing some type of declaration or state of emergency. Again, just like public safety agencies are planning and preparing, these protesting groups will plan and prepare. They do training. They have safe houses. They conduct surveillance on law enforcement. They will videotape everything. They have bike teams. They have their own medics. They use radio communication. So some of these groups are very sophisticated. You can see the picture here. These can be a problem, these little squirt guns. They look harmless, but they'll put ammonia in them, gasoline, biohazards, again, the urine feces. They'll spray chemicals on responders. So these can lead to some problems. Obviously, Molotov cocktails can be a serious fire hazard, so we need to plan for those. The protesters will throw rocks, bricks, bottles, cans, fireworks. They will take what look like normal items and can put them together and can launch these things. BBs, wrist rockets, lug nuts. As I said earlier, the protesters can form human chains. And when they do that, using these protester devices or locking devices, using bike locks and PVC pipes, you know, we have to be able to safely remove them, and that is a joint operation with fire EMS and law enforcement. Again, some of the devices they use, drums, bicycle locks. One thing that happens a lot with these events you need to plan for, during these events, if there is problems, you know, they will start calling in bomb threats. They'll start calling in suspicious package calls, things like that. So that's why if you have the time, you form what's called that JHAT, that Joint Hazard Assessment Team, which is made up of, you know, hazmat and bomb squads. You already have that formed up. They can respond in there and address these very quickly. 911 centers are going to get hammered when these events happen, so you have to plan for that, with both related and unrelated 911 calls. A lot of these events, when you see the pepper spray and the pepper balls being used, you have a large number of people that need to be decontaminated. Before they're arrested and processed, they need to be decontaminated. Before they're taken in the hospitals, they need to be decontaminated. So, again, those are just some of the thoughts that you need to think about. Just some hazards and risks I threw out there that happen with some of these events. So a couple other issues to think about with pre-incident planning. I can't stress it enough, incident command system, setting up that unified command, whether it's a planned event that we know that's coming a month before or it just all of a sudden happens tonight, you know, we've got to get all the agencies together and start addressing those problems. Because remember, that unified command will address your communications, your resources, and everything like that. Obviously, law enforcement will be the lead in this. Planning. Number one, you need to plan now to have plans. Again, sometimes your county multi-hazard plan may address this, or you're putting together a plan for a special event. This is a multi-agency plan that needs to take place here. It takes all the agencies to, again, identify how are we going to communicate, who needs what resources, how do we address the rest of the jurisdiction, to identify those objectives, to come up with those incident action plans if you're going to do those. So that planning needs to be a multi-agency plan. There is training out there available on these The Department of Homeland Security at the Center for Domestic Preparedness actually does training on this, different types, including those for emergency management and command staff. I've attended that years ago. It's a good program. But again, training, exercises are important. If you put this plan together, let's do an exercise. If you have an event coming up, let's do an exercise for that. We talked about the groups. This is one time where intelligence and information sharing can be critical. You know, what are our threats? What are these individuals saying? What are these groups saying on the Internet? You know, who's the problem? To the point of there is no problem. We don't need to worry about this. We don't see a serious threat, and that's good. Most events, I think it's important to look at, are we going to need to activate the Emergency Operations Center? Because the EOC is already a secured location with all the phone lines and the infrastructure and the Internet and the capabilities you need for an event that's going to go on for more than several hours. Obviously, speaking to the community, the media, the social media, that can be addressed through your Joint Information Center. Why emergency management plays an important role with these, again, is that EOC, that JIC, mutual aid. You may need to bring in mutual aid resources. So this is where emergency management and your mutual aid agreements can come into effect. State and federal support. Some of these you may need to, whether immediately we need state support or we're planning an event. You know, obviously the DNC and the RNC are going to have local, state, and federal resources there, so we need to request those resources. And just food for thought again, those, if you have, like Anaheim or some of these other events, you may need to do a declaration of some form or fashion to ban the sale of firearms or gasoline or alcohol for a specific area or jurisdiction. Just based on how you're going to do your declarations. But that may be a valuable tool, but that needs to be a joint decision with all these different agencies on when we do this declaration, how does it apply to us, when is it going to end? Because, again, like with any other disaster, we want to return the community to normal as soon as possible. So, again, and getting close to wrapping up the PowerPoint part of this, you know, a little preparation goes a long way, and I think communities with a lot of these events that do planning and preparation for these issues, when they happen, they're handled a lot more efficiently, a lot safer. So I think it's just a good idea to have a clear idea, what are we going to do if this happens? And if we can't do anything, who do we call to help us on that? So if you have a plan in place, you know, let's make sure that's up to date. And with any multi-hazard assessment planning process, no matter we're talking about a tsunami, a volcano, or a terrorist attack, you need to do that multi-agency exercise. The tabletop or functional to bring all those agencies together to talk about what are we going to do. I just threw these up. These are some, you know, the little command school type tabletops that we have done. And These are obviously a lot more cost efficient, easier to do than full scale drills and exercises. And it may be a little more difficult to do full scale drills and exercises for a civil unrest event. But it's a good idea. Let's do this type of, whether you're a normal tabletop or these command school functional tabletops, let's bring those agencies together and let's go through these scenarios. Even if you have some type of a major sporting event coming up or a KKK protest or a major trial coming up. Let's do a few hours and do this type of tabletop just to kind of war game. What are we going to do? What's our battle rhythm going to be? And some things like that. And obviously, we're always going to use our incident command system to do that. And again, from emergency management perspective, two key things is that Emergency Operations Center. It sometimes seems that communities are hesitant to use the EOC. That is what it's there for. A secured location for command, control, communications, coordination. So you can activate this prior to the event or an immediate event, whether you're using your local EOC staff or if you're bringing in an incident management team, and that's why I put the IMT there, or if you have multiple command posts set up in your community. Remember, the EOC is communicating with those command posts. Okay, that EOC is there to support that response or that event. And again, the Joint Information Center is going to be, I think, very important because you've got to communicate with the community when these type of events are unfolding. And obviously, we can do an hour on social media, but I underline that with what I was seeing out of Anaheim, California. There's literally hundreds of videos and tweets and Facebook postings coming out on these. So I think it's important that we, too, as the communities and response agencies, can you know, counter that and put our message out about what's happening and what the community needs to do. So kind of wrapping this up, and I started on it, and I'll end on it again. You know, August is not focused on just protests. I think protests are all right. You know, they're identified in the U.S. Constitution, and you know, we have no problem. Every day in this country we have peaceful protests and assembly, and that's important, and we can and we should. Just yesterday we had a protest in our community, a little one. As soon as law enforcement showed up, they told them to leave, and they did, and it was no problem. And again, I was kind of focused on that rare occasion when public safety becomes a concern, because these events really are going to impact your entire community and things that are going on there. So I very quickly went through that, but so I will ask everyone to be safe, and I guess I will hand it back over to you, Amy, if you guys have any questions.
Thank you very much, August. Very good information. Let me get this. There we go. All right. We will now proceed to our Q&A. And if you want to ask a question or make a comment, the main point here is please do put it in the Q&A panel, not the chat panel. And I will just announce who the question is from and read the question out loud over the bridge, and then August will just respond over the bridge. Now, I'm sure both of us would be, if you've had any specific experience along these lines in your communities, we would definitely be interested in hearing about that and what you all are doing and what you have learned from it. Okay, so I have one. Let me get this a little bit smaller where I can see it. All right. We have a question from Derek White, and he asks, how have you succeeded at getting law enforcement to include fire and emergency management in the pre-planning for these events? In some communities, cops can be hesitant about including EM and fire in events where they have the lead.
Okay, well, that's a good question, and we could even take civil unrest out of this and just say that can be an issue in a lot of communities. I think, number one, that comes down to each community is a lot different, the relationships and the networking that you have in place. And so that's why I think, number one, with the civil unrest part, if you had an incident happen right now and you've never done anything with them, when that incident happens, you're not going to be successful in trying to work with anybody. And so I think when it comes to civil unrest events, it's good to work with these agencies, even if you have to reach out to them. I think what helped a lot of people, we already had good relationships, and then 9/11 happened and all those kind of efforts, so we really got a better foot in the door with law enforcement. So now I'm even involved in intelligence sharing and information efforts and threat assessments and things like that. So I think number one is building those relationships prior to, and we say this all the time, but it is important. And I know where you're coming from, Derek, because civil unrest is typically a law enforcement only matter. When the response happens, it's not, because it takes the whole community, but it's a law enforcement matter. And so it's sometimes hard to get in there. So I think just sitting down and talking about them, to get their example, if you're working on your plan, your multi-hazard plan. In our multi-hazard plan, the law enforcement annex, we brought the law enforcement agencies in to help us do that, because I can't write that. You know, we just facilitate that. We let them write that and kind of guide them through that process. So I do recognize, and I know that answer is true, because typically civil unrest is considered only a law enforcement event. But here we've done a good job, and we've had like our Dixie Classic Fair, which has, you know, several hundred thousand people coming a week. We've become involved with all the agencies and pre-planning that, doing incident action plan for that. We've done our big air show, which gets, you know, 100,000 people. We've been involved in that. So I think you take any opportunity you can to help do that, and you have to show what emergency management can help do. And, you know, we can get in there to help you. Here's what we can offer. But I know that can sometimes be an issue. I don't have a I don't have the 100% answer because every community is different, and I hear that a lot.
Right, and those exercises you mentioned, that's an opportunity to do that as well, wouldn't you think?
Yes, certainly. The tabletops are any type.
We have several good questions waiting for you. We've got John Bauman who asks, what are best practices for engaging the private sector in planning and response for these types of events, obviously?
Well, obviously the first thing you need to look at is we'll start with critical infrastructure. And I'll use us as an example, not to say we're the best ever, but just things that I'm familiar with that we do that are successful. We have our local emergency planning committee. We have our power companies, our natural gas companies, our big employers, our hospitals. We have them involved in that local emergency planning committee. After 9/11, we put together a domestic preparedness task force of all the agencies to kind of make decisions on the homeland security efforts and funding and things and grants. We put a representative from private industry on that task force, so they have a voice into that. And we also, in our emergency operations center, we have a table for private industry there. So we're really trying to engage consistently, especially with critical infrastructure. But, just this week, the past 2 weeks, we've had severe weather come through the community, and so we're in communications with critical infrastructure anyway. I will say that during civil unrest events, it seems that some of these groups are going to target critical infrastructure, so it would behoove them, I'll try to use a big word, to get on board with this and to let, you may need to reach out to them that if they're going to be in the impacted area or they may be targets, to get them on board and see what they're doing, because they may already be planning, but we want to get them on the same sheet of music. And, boy, for some reason, Starbucks, if you have a Starbucks, talk to them if there's something going on in that area, because they're always going to get targeted. And I know in Anaheim they were targeted. So that, just like with law enforcement, engaging private sector is a never-ending process. And something we do, and not to spend a lot of time on this, we will go in and do tabletops for the private sector, especially larger business and industry and corporations. We'll go in and do 3-4 hour tabletop on what they consider a worst-case scenario and kind of run them through that process and help them out and build those relationships.
Yeah, and we often even see, small businesses being affected quite often. Okay, I have a question from Chris Sager, and he asks, how do you involve community agencies in preparedness and preparing who may be advocates for communities that are often affected by civil unrest?
I'm not quite sure. I'm 100% sure what we're asking.
I think Chris is kind of referring to, this whole community approach, community outreach, coordinating with non-government organizations or community-based organizations that, perhaps are representative of racial minorities or, maybe even faith-based, trying to get those folks involved.
Okay. I can tell you that I think a good, and we're addressing this now here, is through the VOAD and the COAD. We have recently been working with some of the groups we normally are not involved in, faith-based groups, community organization groups that normally in public safety we're not dealing with, but through the COAD or VOAD organizations, you can build those groups up. So I think that has been a window for us to reach out to these groups. But I think if your community is impacted by this, this is going to be part of that communications, that Joint Information Center, getting that message out to social media and to the community. Because both, I was looking at the Anaheim incident and the Dallas, Texas incident. Those are neighborhood-based, racially motivated issues and some impacts there. So I think you really quickly have to get those individuals involved to let them know, here's what we're doing. There's no secrets. What can you offer? What can you bring to the table? Because, again, we recognize volunteer organizations and community organizations can help us in a lot of disasters and crisis situations. I hate to use the word disaster because a community can go 40 years and never have a disaster, but you can have all kinds of high-impact incidents. So both in disasters and crisis, they can help. But for us recently, it's been the VOAD effort. It has kind of helped us reach out to organizations we may not normally communicate with.
And again, it's building those relationships before something happens, right?
Yes, the moment a riot breaks out is probably not the best time in the world to start sharing information with these groups.
Right. Okay, John Calhoun asks, have you seen resistance to including EMS responders in the planning process? My experience is that they often become targets, victims during civil unrest, as you mentioned, August.
So that's why it's very important that you do some pre-planning, because, yes, fire trucks and ambulances also can be targeted. And if we don't have an organized response to this, that's where they're going to be unescorted and trying to go into these situations. So that's why if you're planning an event, you need to plan for that. Obviously, we're going to have fires. We're going to have medical calls. Those don't stop. They increase. If you can provide law enforcement escort for those agencies, then you're going to be able to address that. But if we have the incident unfold in four different command posts and no one's communicating, then I think that's where you're going to see people getting injured and problems taking place like that. But if we have a plan in place or we are, have a unified command, and before I dispatch that ambulance or fire truck, I say I need three patrol vehicles to go with it, I think you can address all that. But again, that our biggest issue always, communications, will address that. So training, exercises, and pre-planning will address that issue of leaving maybe EMS and fire out to hang there. And that happens. All the way back to the L.A. riots, most of the responders that were injured were fire and EMS. The firefighter was shot with the Los Angeles Fire Department. So pre-planning, training, and exercises, and working together, unified command, I think can address that.
Good deal. Speaking of exercises, August, do you know of any good sources for exercise scenarios that might already be out there? You mentioned that one course at the National Preparedness Center.
Number one, the Center for Domestic Preparedness does do several classes, some for law enforcement, some for the protester tactics, and one for command staff. I'll put a plug in there for Center of Domestic Preparedness. It's a three-day program, or it was when we did it, and there is a big exercise part of that. What I would also encourage, I'll be glad if someone wants, information on doing a realistic. We don't want to go overboard with these exercises because you lose interest and credibility, but, take a realistic scenario. The best thing to do that is take what's going on in Anaheim, California right now and put that incident in your community.
Right.
Set up that scenario. And that's what I normally do. Take realistic scenarios that have occurred in like communities to yours, your jurisdiction, whether it's 10,000 or 10 million or whatever. Take realistic scenarios and take those from other locations and put them in your community. How would we respond to this? What would we do? What resources do we have? And kind of go through that situation. And again, bring all those key agencies together to do that. But if someone, has some specific questions, I'll be glad to kind of share some lessons learned there, I think, to help people out do that.
Yeah, and I did want to mention those links that we have on our background page. One of them is to that Domestic Preparedness Center. I couldn't come up with the name of it. And another one that you have done, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we kind of have come to the end of our list of questions on this one. Folks, if you still want to get one in, we've got a little bit of time. But I'm going to take a little different tact here and invite people to, while we've got you, August, to, if they have any questions, to expand that topic a little bit to the mass shootings. Again, that was the program that you did for us a year and a half ago, and I would recommend that one also very much to any of our participants today. And again, it is linked from our background page. And so if you have additional questions that relate to the mass shootings, don't want to get into politics or anything, but the emergency management aspect of those types of events, so we could go ahead and take those as well. And did you want to comment on that at all, August, on this most recent?
Yeah, I certainly can. I'm kind of hesitant to say a lot about it because
still unfolding, right?
Whatever you're seeing on the media or being tweeted out, it isn't always accurate. I do know that that shooting was over. You know, most of these shootings take only 4 to 8 minutes. And what that time frame usually is the response time for law enforcement. And I know on this timeline in Colorado, this incident was over in just several minutes. You know, 3 to 4 minutes, and law enforcement was on the scene. They did a really good response there. I know from what I've heard so far, the scene was one of the, what you always hear with these incidents, very chaotic. You know, victims running around, chaos. The individual used a gas of some type, not really sure what that was yet. Kind of a worst-case scenario. Fatalities, trauma codes, victims running around, people fleeing the site, victims found 2 blocks away. But if you listen to the communications tape so far, they had a really good response, a lot of resources coming in very quickly. You hear them using terms command, divisions. You listen to the fire command. They were setting up divisions, staging resources, calling in mutual aid. And they had plenty of resources there, it sounded like. But even with the amount of resources, it was obviously overwhelming. This individual, the shooter, obviously had the his apartment, which really, you know, again, is that diversion, that secondary attack, that secondary device going on there. So they really had two different incidents unfolding in one community, which is really draining on your resources. And I think that that incident, they're basically still responding to that, and it's going to take some time to recover for that. But I've had a lot of questions coming in and even some phone interviews on to talk about the shooter, and I'm hesitant to do that so far. We don't know. We really don't know his history or his intent or what was going on there. Obviously, the only thing I could say for sure is that guy put a lot of thought into that, a lot of planning. And, you know, on a personal note, that night here in North Carolina, I was home in bed, but my son, my youngest, who's 13, went with some of his friends and some other dads to the midnight showing here of Batman. So, you know, that's kind of a scary thought there, but to show that they can happen anywhere. And before I did this seminar, I was over at Winston-Salem State University, one of our colleges, doing a presentation, and, you know, I reminded them that individual involved in the Colorado shooting, you know, spent weeks and months at a college campus doing who knows what at this point. So, you know, this guy's kind of floated around. So I think on that incident, you know, we still need to wait and see what's going to come out on that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, every once in a while when you do see a good response, it's like, yeah, all that planning and training and exercising, you know, pays off. So. Okay, I do have another question for you from Jim Sells. First, a comment. He says, we commonly include our public safety agencies in planning for civil unrest. His question is, do you agree that legal counsel is not only important in the planning, but in the management of the incident?
Yes, I would definitely say at some point, especially on this topic, you will need to have some type of legal guidance or discussion there. Because of things like the mass arrests that are taking place, you may be doing those declarations. Because, you know, when you start banning the sale of alcohol, gasoline, firearms, you start doing curfews and those type of issues, you're going to need to have some legal guidance and counsel there. So I think that is important. Now, are they going to, you know, honestly, is legal counsel going to come and go through five-hour exercises with you and those things? Maybe not, probably not, I don't know. But at some point, especially if you have an incident occurring or you have an event that's going to be coming up and you think this could be an issue, I definitely would get them involved in this conversation and see what they think about that.
Sure, and especially if you're planning on doing some kind of template for a declaration for this type of incident, that's when you can involve them, right?
Yes. Yes, anytime you're doing declarations, you know, and I just, on declarations, you, every block on there does not need to be filled out for every declaration. Those are, you select what you need for that. But I think with this, with the civil unrest event, because there are going to be use of force issues, there are going to be mass arrests, there's going to be all kinds of things taking place. They would need to be part of that what we would call kind of the executive or policy group in the EOC, they would need to be part of that discussion.
All right, very good. Okay, well, we have got a few more minutes, but we have come to the end of one more. Here we go. One from Isabel. Thank you, Isabel McCurdy says, what communication should be in place with the crowd during a planned event that turns into civil unrest?
Yikes, that's kind of a tough one. With a crowd or an audience of people somewhere, you know, it depends on the venue, I think. You know, at a sporting event, at a concert, hopefully there's some type of means. You may not always have means of communicating with these individuals. In a law enforcement, once it turns into a law enforcement matter, you know, legally they have to make notification to that audience, that crowd, they need to disperse. Legally law enforcement needs to do that before they put hands on people, before they start trying to move people. All the way to, I think, going to Mardi Gras. Before they start moving that crowd, when they start clearing the streets of Mardi Gras, they make that announcement via PAs and things like that, that, you need to move and things that need to happen. So it may be difficult in these events to communicate with that large of a crowd, especially one that's hostile and running and moving around. But I do know the law enforcement will, before they do anything in these events, they're going to start making those announcements to that crowd or that group of people, what needs to happen.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, back on the EMS, because we obviously have some interest. I know frequently with the planned events that, they will have set up medical stations around. Should planning include, the ability to kind of do that for these unplanned events, do you think?
That on a planned event, you're going to have your first aid stations and your EMS units there that are staged. But you need to plan, what are we going to do to provide health and medical care to people in a riot? But that may depend on the situation.
Sure.
Maybe a small event. For us, small event, our EMS has tactical medics. And those tactical medics have trained with law enforcement agencies on what care they're going to provide to both. My priority, again, is the responders, how we take care of the responders, how do we take care of law enforcement, how do we take care of bystanders, how do we take care of people in the crowd, how do we take care of those that have been arrested. That maybe become fluid once that event unfolds, but that can be a small thing with two medics all the way up to we need a strike team of 50 ambulances or excuse my span of control, 5 to 7 ambulances per strike team or obviously you're going to need to get the hospitals involved in this because if this unfolds and you start bringing people to hospital, you're just expanding this problem into the hospital. So that's going to have to be discussed and will become fluid during the response.
Yeah, but it's something to think about in advance, right?
You need to think about it in advance.
Yeah.
The moment it happens, not the time to start trying to figure that out.
That was my point. Okay, well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up for today. August, on behalf of Ava Jean, myself, and all our participants, we thank you very much for coming once again and sharing this information with us. And I think we're going to see even more of these as the year progresses.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And, I guess if people have questions, they can funnel those to me.
Okay, very good. Now, folks, before you go, please do take a moment to fill out our feedback form if you have additional questions or comments. Please go ahead and put those in as well. Again, if you're not on our mailing list, you can go to our homepage and subscribe, and you will get our announcements. And you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. And don't forget, or if you're not aware, we do offer CEUs for attending our programs. You will, through a partnership with Jacksonville State University, you will need to register with them, and you can find out more information about that, again, on a link from our homepage, or we include the link in all our announcements. Our next program is planned for August 8th, so please join us then. Thanks to everyone for participating today. Have a great afternoon. We are adjourned. Bye, everyone.